Welcome to episode one of our new show. She is Lais, and I am the coach, and that is the name of our show.
First of all, if there's ever been a time for personal bubble, right, this is it.
We will always stay true to what we do. What you're doing is going to get you to the next place.
Okay.
Throw the list away. It's only a matter of time before you cave.
You can look way better than you used to.
Such a great experience.
Oh, like it knows everything you've given.
It's like showing curiosity. What if it actually works?
I've been chopped it out como persona.
100%.
An extra
bite of a city right now.
Sometimes it is a member.
Welcome, everybody. Peace out, everybody. You gonna tell me when it's live over there?
It's live.
It's live?
Yeah.
Live!
All right. Welcome, everybody, to Lais and the Coach. This is a very special Friday afternoon episode. Not only are we super excited to have Brian and Carrie with us, but there's a lot of history that goes back to when we would watch their show Monday through Friday.
Yeah, kind of trippy, right?
Yes. This is a full circle moment
so
for us.
This is very full circle for us.
Yes.
And typically, like what people do on shows is edify somebody first and say, these people are
epic.
All this stuff, right? and honestly, like, I'm going somewhere with it. Like, it's very hard to say they're mindset experts without giving mindset context. Because I think even in our conversations, that word gets thrown around a lot. So before we do all of the that's who they are, can we just kind of like
and there are a lot more than that. But
right.
That's what we're touching on today.
Right. But can we kind of give a definition, I guess, of what mindset would be or mindset coaching or, you know.
This is great.
This is so much fun. Okay, wait, I need to clarify something right away. Where are we looking?
So that one.
We're live.
Okay. We're live over there.
Okay,
straight ahead.
Because I like it's going to be
Bree's just walking around.
You guys, okay.
And if anybody sees Bree walking around, this will be on YouTube later, so.
Yes, she's recording.
Okay, what's mindset?
No, I'm just joking. I think, you know what, we can talk about it from the context, Carrie, of helping people dissect why they behave and act the way they do.
Love that.
Because it's driven by unconscious drivers that they're not aware of, and we help them understand that.
Yeah. You know, if I've actually talked about this, so see, there, go.
That's okay. Just talk.
I'm just flowing with it. You know, I think that's actually one of the things that I've talked about a lot the last couple of weeks is that, and I'm not going to get the quote right, you're going to correct me on it, by Carl Jung.
Yeah.
Until we make the unconscious conscious, we will forever call it fate, and it will dictate our life.
Close enough that I'm a spot
But I think that really hits the root of it,
yes.
All, right? Like, I think so many people are living in this world where like, oh, I'm consciously living, right? But nobody really knows what that means.
Everybody's consciously living.
Right, nobody really practices that
and
really understands what that means from the depth and the breadth of what it is.
I agree.
And that's why I didn't want to start with they are the creators of a program called Eliminate Your Limits. They've written several books on mindset and they do coaching on mindset because honestly, I know that it gets thrown around, just like dieting, right? Like workouts, like, oh, this workout is great.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you, like, what's the thing at the end? You know, without context, everything is kind of like
100%
up in the air.
It's interesting too, right? Because I think we're in an interesting era of personal development right now where mindset coaching currently is what personal training was 10 years ago. That everybody is a personal trainer 10 years ago, right? Everybody is a mindset coach right now. And, you know,
and a life coach.
A life coach and a mindset coach. And, like, don't even get me started on my soapbox, but, like, when you can purchase a $9.99 certificate online to become a life coach in 2 days, you're missing the point.
And start giving
right?
people advice.
You're missing
what
the
they
point. And, like, and we've talked about this. You're actually doing more damage than you are good.
Great
right? Because you're not really understanding. It's kind of like nutrition, if we're going to talk about nutrition, right? If you don't really understand the science behind it, you're likely going to do more damage than you are going to do good.
You know, I agree with that. I'm not juxtaposing it. I'm just adding this context that I would argue that there are several psychologists who do more harm than they do good.
100%.
And the reason
like
I
nutritionists.
Bring, yes, exactly.
100%. Yeah.
The reason I bring it up is that it's not necessarily afforded to the level of education you have. It's and this is something I keep running into as a theme that I'm teaching a lot these days is that we have to be careful about being myopic. You know what I mean? Like as coaches and mentors, I don't want to just pull from the McNuggets of what I know. I want a broad spectrum of things I can pull from to help people. And I think the whole reality of how much the unconscious influences our reality is just not understood enough by most life mindset coaches and even psychologists.
Yeah. Or it's practiced for 6 weeks.
Right.
Right? And this is, I think, also something kind of pulling
like a 6 week transformation.
Right?
You can't do shit in 6 weeks.
It's right. Like, and you know, I want to say,
swear.
Fuck yeah.
I want to say that I think most people at this point get that if you stop eating healthy and you stop exercising, you're probably going to lose your results. Right?
Yeah.
I think that after like the last 20 years in the health and fitness industry, I think people probably get that.
Yeah.
But people don't yet get that from a mindset and emotional intelligence standpoint.
It's a
right?
journey.
That this is not a like open up a self-help book and read it and voila, you're better.
Yeah.
It really is a lifelong process. And just like you have to work your muscles in the gym, you have to work your mindset muscles, your emotional intelligence muscles
yeah.
in order to continue to foster growth. It's not a destination. And I hate the rhetoric. Like, it's not a destination, it's the journey, right?
Right.
But there's truth to that if you live into that.
Yeah.
And you guys posted the other day something, practice what you post.
Mm.
And it was so
yeah,
powerful
like
because
actually,
like it's like, don't just post the quote if you're not living into the quote and really understanding what that means.
Yes.
And that's kind of like from a selfish perspective, why I wanted you guys to come because like in our daily interaction, a lot of what we see, the obstacles are not calorie based.
Right.
The obstacles are not push up or squat based.
Right.
The obstacles that I see are much deeper,
for
right?
Sure.
The relationship that people have with how they feel about their weight on the scale when they get up in the morning, the relationship that people have with food has absolutely nothing to do with calories,
yeah.
right? Even today I wrote, if you are growing up in an environment or grew up in an environment where when you sat down for dinner, you could not get up until your plate was empty,
yeah.
and that was a problem, that's where it starts,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, that's where we started the problem.
Yeah.
And then it escalates, right? Because then, are you hiding food, right? Are you feeling bad about not being
yeah.
able to
when
finish?
When I used to cry at the table.
Right? Yeah. right, and it's like, all right, now I got these people watching me,
yeah.
you know, they're supposed to care about me, but I'm being forced to finish this. And if you're a kid, right, and that's the
because
beginning of it.
Because there's starving kids in Africa.
Well,
who did hear that?
Oh my gosh,
yeah.
I heard that like
every
day.
Yeah. If I eat this, that's all
yeah.
that's
going to solve the problem. So if I eat my Brussels sprouts, that problem's going to go
away?
They're
good.
Okay. But I think that it starts there. Now you get a 30, 40, 50, 60-year-old human
yeah.
that has an emotional bind to
yes.
a number on a piece of metal in the morning that dictates whether or not they're going to have a good day or not.
You know? Oh my gosh, I could talk about this for hours. You know, it's really interesting because, okay, so as a fitness competitor, which not only mindset coach, but I am a fitness competitor.
Professional fitness
you know,
competitor.
A professional fitness competitor, third in the world. With,
yes.
With Team Forever. You know, I've actually experienced this really recently that like, I made a comment somewhere on a post where I was like, you know, nobody knows how hard pull-ups are in fluffy season. Right, because fluffy season, you know, however much more weight, well, I'm pulling that much more weight.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody kind of like hit me back and was like, why do you have to call it fluffy season? Don't you realize when you call it fluffy season that you're insulting everybody who's a little overweight and feels insecure about themselves? And I'm like, actually, I said, I think that's way more of a mindset challenge
yeah.
than it is anything else. Because I said, here's the reality. I am fatter than I was in August. I literally have more fat on my body. But what
on purpose.
People, yes,
yeah,
and what people don't understand, and I talk about this all the time with women, what people don't understand is that fat does not have to equate to I hate myself. And that's where people are getting struggling, or they're struggling with the scale, right? Because they get on the scale, they see a number, and that number dictates their self-image,
yeah.
their self-worth. And then they start like sabotaging themselves and feeling inferior.
Where do you think that stems from? Because there's no correlation with those three digits and anything else, right? Because
yeah.
it could be anything, you know, whether it's one number or another has really no significance to what you look like, you know, tangibly. So,
it's a particularly interesting question as well, because I mean, I don't know about this stuff as much as you guys do, but I also know that I can.
Are we good there? Like, can you check?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I can be 10 pounds up on the scale, but look better.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that factually because the scale is a metric that displays a lot of different factors all coming together. And when Karen and I wrote our curriculum for our certification process, we put the concept of influence first for exactly this reason. More often than not, the mindset we carry about almost everything in life is based on the influences we've received. And those influences are environmental. You talked about that childhood. That is your greatest influence, what mm-hmm. happened to you as a child. And it doesn't have to be traumatic. It can be sit at the table and eat Brussels sprouts because there are starving kids in Africa. Mm-hmm. That sets the seeds for a really inappropriate relationship with food. Mm-hmm. You know? But it's social. If I think about the number of videos I've seen, and it breaks my heart every time, of rather large women who make a display of taking a scale to a parking lot and hitting it with a hammer while they recite these, "You don't own me." And it breaks my heart because they think that's the problem.
Oh,
it's not the problem. The problem is the mental narrative they have around that number, which is a product of influence.
I feel like we're getting on all our soapboxes right now because that's such a huge soapbox for me. Yeah. Like, so being in the trenches as a coach for 20 years in mindset, like, I understand the psychology of why people do that. Like, it's not like I don't understand it, but it really is the equivalent of putting a Band-Aid over a gunshot wound.
Yeah.
The problem is not the fact that you hate the scale and that you hate when you step on it. The problem is that internal narrative of what you're telling yourself about the scale and when you step on it. And I think that this is where it comes back to that whole journey, not a destination. Like, you know, and I've actually, over the years, I've documented how, like, 128 pounds, right? 5 years ago, 6 years ago, 3 years ago, 2 months ago, they're all different bodies, mm-hmm. right? And like that education of understanding who we are and what our bodies are made up of and muscle and fat and hydration and all yeah. that jazz, right? And yet we still think that the scales are a problem.
Yeah.
And what we're not doing, and it drives me crazy that people are not willing to invest in the real truth of understanding their mindset and unpacking, like, why am I hating myself because a number on the scale? Why can't I just look at that as data? It's because they're attaching. So in my opinion, they're attaching their self-worth to it. And then on top of that, they're attaching suffering to that, right? The pain to the suffering. Yeah. Like, I didn't lose weight today. Okay. But now all of a sudden, I didn't lose weight today. I'm a fat cow. I'm never going to be able to accomplish anything. See, I fucked up again. Yeah. And then the narrative goes and goes and goes.
It spirals.
And
it's another thing to beat yourself up about.
It drives you to donuts.
And then it drives you to self-sabotage.
Because now you're like, who cares? I'm already fat.
Right.
Might as well.
And it can all make sense, but there is still a block between that logic and mathematical explanation and the way that the person feels mm-hmm. about it.
I'm so curious to know what you're going to say. I have an answer to that, but I want to know what you're going to say.
Oh, thank you.
So curious. Yeah. Where are we going to go with this? We're going to go the same way.
it's understanding the paradigm of the human brain and the human brain's hierarchy of what it has deemed as the most important thing. And what that is safety. Safety and self-preservation. So the human brain, at all costs, will put your safety and your self-preservation above everything else. And people always look at that from a actual physical danger or a physiological issue. They don't realize it's also a narrative issue. Mm-hmm. So the story you tell it so often, you tell it with such emotion that you essentially hijack the brain into believing that's a really important thing to keep you alive. Mm-hmm. So now you guys being great coaches come along and say, listen, the number on the scale doesn't matter that much. Now, conceptually, your client believes you. But the real problem is that their brain doesn't. And the client only believes themselves. Like, that's the kind of way the brain works. So they understand what you're saying, and they like it, and they want to believe it, but their brain overrides it. Mm-hmm. You have told me this story so many times that, and you've told it with such emotion and such fervor, that this is a story I recognize is important to your survival. So you can rationally, intellectually, conceptually throw anything at them. Unless they undo that story, nothing changes. And that's why mindset is such an important part to the fitness spectrum.
I love that. So you gave the beginning part of where I was going to go. You gave the concept now.
Very symbiotic.
Right? I want to talk practical application on that. Well, not practical application so much, but levels of learning. Mm-hmm. Right? Because, most people aren't familiar with the levels of learning, right? Like, every skill that you acquire has to go through levels of learning. The first level is unconscious incompetence, which where basically you don't know what you don't know. Mm-hmm. The second level is conscious incompetence, where now you know that you don't know. Like, you're aware, but you don't know what to do about it, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm aware that I'm self-sabotaging myself, that I don't really need to hate myself with a number on the scale, but, you know, I can't do anything about it.
I don't mean to interject, but that's where great coaches like Raph and Lays come in.
Right.
Is you put people in conscious incompetence. They get what you're saying. They don't have to do about it, though. Yeah. They don't know how to change it.
Right, and then the third level is conscious competence, which is where, as long as, and everybody listen, because this is the this is the most important level, but this is the level that everybody misses.
Yeah.
Conscious competence. As long as you are consciously focused in the right direction, you can maintain that perspective.
Yes.
And it's, for lack of better words, it's the practice round, right? And it's where you get the reps in. And then the last phase is unconscious competence.
Correct.
Right? There's so many words, like so many unconscious competence and all that stuff. Unconscious competence, where at that point you essentially don't even remember what it used to be like,
right.
You know, when you were back in that place. But what we've observed so much in the industry, like nobody right now listening would expect that if you have never done a squat before, you're going to walk into the gym and you're going to be perfect on a squat.
Right.
Right? Or that you'd be able to go in and squat 300 pounds. We all can appreciate the fact that we need to practice. It might take like 3,000 reps in the gym to get really good at that. And we go to the gym and we practice it and we execute it. People don't make the same crossover with mindset, right? So in a non-triggered moment, because I have clients too, so I know this reality, right? In a non-triggered moment, your clients will be like, oh, you know what, you're right. Like, this scale does not define me, right? Until the next morning when they get back on the scale. Mm. They are not consciously competent. They have not yet practiced the reps of reframing that narrative, of owning that narrative, changing the story, of bringing the education in and understanding it. And I think that human beings have such an issue with emotional suffering because they somehow diminish themselves to being weaker human beings because of it. So they got to get rid of it really fast, right? I got to fix this because it hurts.
Ooh, that's right? Another
that's
question that
so
I have.
So good.
Like, I got to fix this because it's hurting my heart. Well, you go to the gym and you squat and you come home, and if you don't hurt, you're like, why do I not hurt?
Yeah.
But when you feel emotional hurt, that's when we're like, oh no, I can't deal with that, right? So there's so many dualities between the two that if we could just learn how to cross them over and take what I apply to myself, I want to hurt after a workout. Well, maybe it's okay for me to be challenged by the scale. Maybe this is really where my mindset muscle is growing, mm-hmm. right? But we don't sit well with emotional pain.
But I do want to say this too. I think that a lot of times people don't realize that a lot of the things that are supposed to be basic are not. Meaning everyone knows that they can't go into the gym and squat 300 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
But everyone thinks they know how to eat. I know what to do.
Right.
I know how.
Yeah.
Everyone thinks that they can handle their emotions.
Yeah.
This is bothering me, but it's okay. Like, I know how to get out of this. Right? They think that mindset or emotional intelligence or whatever you guys called it, that was cool, and nutrition is something that everyone is just born knowing how to do it because you're eating.
Yeah.
You're getting through life. Like, of course.
You're eating and thinking.
You're eating and thinking.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Of course you fucking know how to do it. Like, right? It's human nature, but it's not.
It's not at all.
You're not taught it in school. You're not taught it at home for the most part.
Yeah.
And you're not ever really conscious of it. You just go with it. You just go with the food. You just go with the way of thinking.
Yep.
But everyone knows they can't walk on a football field and freaking kill it or walk into a gym and squat. Like, you're aware of the things that you can't do,
mm-hmm.
but everyone thinks that food and thinking is just natural.
Oh, you're spot on.
And it's not.
You're spot on.
You know?
It's so interesting too, because like there's so much research on the fact that emotional intelligence is the number one predictor of success and happiness.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it's not taught, it's not fostered, and virtually nobody has it. Emotional
mm-hmm.
intelligence. Like, can we remain non-reactive?
Right.
You know, thinking about maybe I step on a scale every morning. I'm not happy with what I see. So you're my coach, and I send you my body weight with a poop emoji because I'm like, this sucks. You know what I mean? Like, that's an example of somebody with a very low emotional intelligence. They can't separate the number from themselves.
Yeah.
They can't not react.
Right.
Like, they're looking to escape the pain by being jestful about it, or maybe provoking their coach to tell them it's all going to be okay.
Mm.
Those are examples of people with low emotional intelligence, but it's not taught. It's not taught. And we're not born with it either.
We're not.
We
don't think that they are.
And those people are essentially in that level one, right? Unconscious and competent.
They don't know that.
They don't know that they actually could be choosing a different reaction. And that different reaction doesn't come, like, it's not like watching a podcast or reading a book or going to a seminar, right? That ability to step out of that trigger reaction comes through practice.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's where it comes, right? And sometimes
sometimes
it takes 5, 6, 7 weeks, 8 weeks, whatever.
Or longer.
I mean,
look at
like the food and the training. You can't get the plan.
And I want to go back to the time thing, but before I do, like, so do you guys think that the amount of time that it took to get the person to where they are currently,
yeah,
with the amount of thoughts that they have, is it the same amount of repetition on the other side to undo or reprogram?
That's not been my experience. I don't know about you, because we coach independently, but I mean, generally speaking, you have 60 to 80,000 thoughts a day.
Or is that the process?
It is the process, yeah. Okay. Yeah, the vast majority of our thoughts are unconscious. Most people don't know this. I think it's a very telling stat. Two stats, really. 80% of what we think every day is negative, and 75% of what we think every day is repetitive, meaning we're thinking the same shit every day, and it's not very good.
Yeah.
Right? So think about that. Like, so do we need to amass that level or that total or that totality of thoughts to reverse engineer? No. It's remarkably less time than that.
Yeah.
I've always thought it depends a great deal on motivation. How much do you want to change the story?
Well, you're going to say, I was going to, you know, because obviously we're kind of breaching this into nutrition, health, and fitness. Like, I was going to go back to compliance, right? So for me, the results appear based on the compliance and the consistency of the execution,
yeah.
Right? So for someone, for example, who's going to show up every single day and just do the work and execute the work and boom, they're there, they're going to accelerate their process and can literally undo shit from like 40 years inside of 6 weeks.
Yeah.
But there's that compliance factor, right?
Yes.
And so that compliance factor, whether it's motivation, whether it's education, because I think education breeds compliance in some instances.
You say that all the time.
You know, whatever the driver is that's going to get them to be compliant and consistent and executing. So there's no question, the more reps you get in, the quicker it's going to be to undo. And that comes down to like all those scenarios.
Simple plus consistent.
100%.
That's my forever equation. And of course, I don't work in nutrition whatsoever, but if I did, I'd consider the idea of follow the guidelines, follow them every day, and the last consideration is don't talk shit. You're not allowed to talk shit to me.
Yeah.
You can talk shit in your own head.
And you don't do nutrition, but you're an athlete as well, so you're aware of how it all
do you, kind of I have a coach, and whenever I question myself, he's the first one to tell me to stop. Like, I'm not listening to that bullshit.
Mm.
You know?
I really want to go back to the time thing, but you keep saying things that are still present.
We need a notepad.
Like, well, no, I'm not gonna lose it because the time thing is very relevant. But the compliance thing.
Yeah.
Do you think that the compliance thing is a trigger? What makes somebody be more compliant? Is it the result of maybe anchoring something that they want more?
Mm-hmm.
Like, do they wake up one day and be like, wow, my wedding is coming?
Yep.
Or the stage is coming? Or insert thing.
It's a good question.
That makes them say, fuck, I gotta do this shit right now.
Yeah.
You know, I have no choice.
Yeah, absolutely. My two are always anchors and pain. So the anchor is spot on. That's absolutely right. Like, it's amazing I can go 25 years of not being compliant with nutrition, but I'm getting married in 6 weeks. So now I'm all hands on.
Right. Every meal, right? Every workout, everything.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So the anchor sometimes outweighs everything else, and that's a huge part of it. The pain is the other part as well, though. Pain is an interesting topic all to itself. I mean, we all have layers of unconscious pain.
Mm-hmm.
Most of us don't know all of the pain we have experienced in our lives because we have buried it quite deep. But when I mean pain in this context, I mean, at some point, the pain of being the way you are starts to become more problematic than the compliance that will change it.
Yes.
100%.
Yes. Say it. Go ahead.
Yes. Preach. That's how it's, because it's true.
And,
like,
and then here's my follow-up question would be, then are the goals that people are setting weak?
Mm-hmm.
Because if the anchor's not big enough, right, does it really require something at the magnitude of, I'm getting married in 6 weeks,
right,
or I have my X anniversary or birthday.
Yeah.
Does the anchor have to be so big, right, for that to happen?
Yeah.
And then are people just having weak goals or weaker expectations?
It's a great
question. I think that one of the things that people have to appreciate, that mindset like nutrition is so individual,
mm-hmm.
right?
There's not
it's not a one-stop shop, right? Because the answer is, like, it depends. Right?
It's
your favorite.
It depends.
Where's it going?
Like, because if someone comes to me with, you know, like horrible habits, no anchor, no motivation, their goal may be simply to like wake up every day and go for a walk. Right? And like, that's what we build everything around. Right? Whereas some people are going to be, so in my experience, some people are driven by the short term and some people are really driven by the long term.
Mm-hmm.
And what you have to do is find Like, if going into the long term of, like, a wedding or a competition or whatever, like, that the case may be, for someone is inspiring and motivating and they can execute that, that's great. But if it's too far away and they're getting all jumbled in their head, we need to probably bring it back closer to where they are right now. And what do they need to do right now? I think one of the other things that most people don't appreciate enough is just the whole science of, like, habit change.
Yeah.
Right? Like, habit change, skill acquisition. Absolutely. Like, all these things. Like, people talk about, like, I want to eat better. I want to exercise. I want to do all these things. But they don't understand the intricacies of what is going into that. Right?
Yeah.
Your brain is conditioned. So, love it or hate it, everybody, if you have bad habits, your brain is conditioned to those bad habits.
Yes.
And those bad habits are comfort. And your brain's job,
yes,
is to keep you alive.
Exactly. Safety.
Therefore,
yeah,
when you step,
yeah,
out of that realm of the safety of what the brain knows, even though consciously you know potato chips and sitting and watching TV all night is not healthy, it's where your brain feels safe.
Yeah.
So you're trying to, like, push the bar and go and change things. Your brain's going to start to fight you. And, like, all of a sudden, that couch is going to look really appealing to you, right? And that's where that whole education breeds compliance, I think, is so powerful. Because it's one of the things that we do a lot of. We teach people to understand why their mind is doing what it's doing. Because,
yeah,
then they can understand in those scenarios how to get out of it.
I agree with absolutely all of that.
This is how all our conversations go.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, we're going to talk about it.
Nora's having point bourbon down here.
I know.
I agree with absolutely everything you said. It's, not especially, but I want to just highlight the part where you talked about bad habits.
Mm.
And people got to recognize, like, the whole concept of, you don't want to have a change it. It's so much easier to say that than it is to do it. Habits fall in line with that whole neurological reality of safety. Our brain likes what it knows.
Uh-huh.
So it's easy to say, just change the habit. Way harder to do it, though.
Yeah.
The only thing I want to add, and I'm not disagreeing, I agree with everything you said, is if the question was generalities, because the answer is it depends.
Mm-hmm.
You're absolutely right. But if I were to answer your question in generalities, I'd say the vast majority of people set goals that are too soft.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually is the problem, is that they're staying inside a very, very, very comfortable place. They're not extending or stretching themselves whatsoever. And so the self-fulfilling prophecy is essentially to stay right there.
Now, let me...
That's
so,
just generality.
No. Right? But let me speak to that, though, for 1 second. Because why are people... So we like going back to drivers, right? Why are people setting goals that are safe? Because there is a lack of self-belief.
Yeah, 100%.
There's a,
right.
You know, so
and the
this,
likelihood that you're going to accomplish,
right,
that goal.
Like, they've
90%.
Already, people
don't
have already decided.
The disappointment.
Yeah, I can't accomplish this. Who,
yeah,
am I to do this,
yeah,
right?
Mm-hmm.
So, like, if you know, we always come back to, like, obviously we always come back to mindset, right? And self-awareness and really traveling that journey and understanding,
mm-hmm,
yourself. Because the reason you're not setting that bigger goal is because you have so much lack of belief,
yep,
in the fact that you're ever going to be able to come,
yep,
close to it.
And I'll say this too, even the people that do set big goals like the sage, because we see it all the time, find a way to get in their own way.
Oh.
Because maybe they had a moment,
yes,
where they were like, you know what, I'm going to have the balls to do this and I'm going to say I'm going to do a show. But then you find a way to, along the way, just continuously interrupt your process because subconsciously you don't feel like you can.
Yep.
Yeah.
So you had enough courage to, like, say you were going to do it. But then in the everyday application, you just don't.
You know, and you guys, you post about this all the time, choose your hard. You always talk about that,
yeah,
right? And I think it applies here so much, right? It's going to be hard not to pursue the goals as,
yeah,
much as it's going to be hard to pursue the
goals.
Because
it sits there,
right?
And people say it all the time, oh, it's so hard, you know, you eat your food all the time. Like, you know how hard it is to wake up the next day with regret or guilt,
yeah,
or
for
a,
sure,
lot heavier because I didn't know what the hell I ate?
Right.
Like, he says it all the time, you know, we are all aware of how much money is in our bank, how much gas goes in our car. Yet we feel like it's such an inconvenience to know how we're feeling our bodies.
Yeah.
But I want to go back to the safety thing because it's something that you say all the time when we talk to people, especially for the first time. You say, like, your body's only job is to protect you.
Keep,
yes,
you alive.
Right? To keep you alive. And so from a nutrition standpoint, a lot of times when people come to us, they're not eating enough, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they're not losing weight because they're not eating enough. And so he's always talking about how, well, your body is not going to shed fat or change the way you look if you're not even giving it enough to survive. No one thinks about your heart beating or your brain,
right,
functioning,
mm-hmm,
or all that stuff. So your heart, your body, from a physical perspective, is trying to keep you alive,
yeah,
and is trying to keep you safe. And clearly so is your mind,
yes,
right? So is your brain. 100%. Your,
yes,
brain is going to gravitate toward the comfortable, toward the known.
So then in a scenario like that, like you said, right, that example, would the solution be, first, let's identify what's actually happening. Like,
mm-hmm,
let's bring it to surface, right? If you're unconsciously going for the bag of chips or the cookie or the thing, would the first step be, well, let's address that. Let's put all our cards on the table.
I'm so interested to see what you're going to say on this.
Yeah.
I wonder if you're going to say the same thing.
You know what's so funny about this is that I'm not going to do the it depends answer. Because as a coach, you know how it goes. Like, there's like 5,000 scenarios. You know, I think that I would bring that back.
Because that's honestly where I'm going.
Right.
Like, that's literally where I want to go, the it depends part.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because it does.
Because it does.
It always
right?
does.
It does.
But like, if, like,
at least the way we all coach.
Yeah.
Because right?
no,
that's not how everyone coaches.
Yeah. If I were to, you know, if I was to take someone who was in that experience, I would probably implement for them two of our pillars immediately, which would be counting your wins and learning your language, right? So I would probably implement the process of, like, every day, counting your wins, counting those small victories every single day.
That most
because
people miss.
100%, yes. Right? Like, because they're like, oh, you know, I didn't drink.
They focus on what they didn't
do. I didn't drink my whole gallon of water, but you drank, you know, 3/4 of it, which
right.
is like 2/4 more than yesterday.
You're even conscious of drinking
right.
water.
Yes. Right.
You drank water.
Exactly.
Right.
So I would probably at that level integrate two of the four pillars, which would be counting your wins, which is where you're celebrating the wins of the day. And just by the, I've had people just do that and message me and tell me, like, my life has already changed.
Yeah.
Because they're reprogramming the narrative that's playing in their mind, right? It's not all, I suck, I did this, I did that, I did this. It's starting to shift it. But at the same time, I'd probably use learning your language, which is that place where we're identifying the narrative. When I step on the scale and I don't see the number, what, aside from just, like, I'm angry, mad face, what am I really feeling?
That was cute.
Right?
I'm disgusting. I'm a fat pig.
Ugly.
Let's dissect that. Let's really understand where that's coming from, which is so that's a little bit of a longer journey, but the counting of the wins is more immediate. So the two of them work kind of really nicely together. Yeah, there's the immediate sense as well as the long work.
May I add to that? Because you said the disgusting, the all that, perfect. And then you said, because where's that coming from? In my casework, I care less about that because that could be a deep dive. Just acknowledging you're saying it.
Yeah.
So that you can gain awareness to stop saying it.
Right.
Like, at this point, early in the coaching process, I don't really care where it comes from.
Right.
Because that could be 15 years of us figuring
deeper.
Things out.
Yeah.
And then,
but at least acknowledge that you're calling yourself
just
disgusting.
Just
keep
learning
right?
language.
Yeah,
it's,
just keep going.
Very much.
Keep the process
just
going.
Acknowledge
right?
that you're calling yourself disgusting so that tomorrow you can be equipped to not call yourself disgusting. That goes a long way.
Or at least acknowledge the fact that you're calling yourself disgusting and it's not serving you.
Exactly.
Right? Like,
it's not moving you forward in any
one
way.
One of the things that I like teaching people is that, like, so you're going to have the triggered moment. Right? So you're going to have a moment where you step on the scale. Apparently the scale is our enemy today. So let's just go with that. Right? You're going to step on the scale. You're going to see the number. You're going to freak out. And then you may spend 3 days not realizing it's ruining your day.
Right?
Right? And it's after 3 days where you're like, oh my God, like, I'm still freaking out about the scale number. Right? So I always say, like, sometimes you catch yourself 3 days after the triggered moment. Right? Instead of trying to avoid the triggered moment right away, let's start to shorten the time frame. Mm-hmm. Right? So instead of 3 days later, well, maybe now you're catching yourself within 24 hours mm-hmm. saying, like, you know what? Okay, now I have new clarity.
Yeah.
I don't have to hold on to this. And what's inevitably going to happen is you're going to get on the scale. I can get on the scale and see a number. Like, I mean, even as a competitor, like, I still have social.
We all have holy shit in this number.
Yeah, like, I get on the scale and I'm like, where the fuck did that number come from, right? But I'm so conditioned that my brain just goes, it's data, right? It's not my number.
And if you're doing the work, then it shouldn't affect you.
It's right. It doesn't belong to me. It's data, right? So you get on the scale and you see it and you can backtrack yourself out of the triggered moment in that. Mm-hmm. And then the ultimate goal would be to, before you get on the scale, now you're like, you've got the perspective, you're owning the perspective, you're going to get on and you're not triggered, mm-hmm. right? So I think people try to jump too much. It's kind of like goes back to those levels of learning. People try to jump too much from, here's the problem, now I'm all the way over here and I'm perfect.
You got
and not recognizing that there's a process in the middle.
Out of curiosity, did you hear me giggle while you were talking there?
Did I say something funny?
Not at all, you were great. I was ridiculous. Here's why. So while you were talking, something you said I agreed with, and I said out loud, I said, oh, that's good. And then I was like, we used to go to a church where the pastor's wife used to sit on the stage, and every time the pastor said something that she liked, she'd be like, that's good. Do you remember that? So I, all of a sudden, like, I'm the pastor's
wife. We brought you into the inside joke.
That is, you know, I don't know if there is a, like, an answer, but observationally, because you guys are in the trenches, right? Is the theory that, or is what people are expecting is this one linear answer.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right? The answer is typically, it depends because we're all different, right?
Yep.
The four of us, Bree recording, we've got different goals, different genetics, different everything, right?
100%.
So it should depend, mm-hmm. right? But why are we anticipating one answer?
Mm.
Why are we kind of seeking this one
golden,
like, universally,
I bring that back to, you know,
is
I bring that back to cultural influence, right? I think so. I think if we were in Africa, we wouldn't be all looking for the same answer, right? I think that in this case, for, I mean, I'm assuming most people are watching right now are in North America, right? We are conditioned by a certain set of expectations, and the scale, for example, the number on the scale, the number in your bank account, are things that are ingrained in us from birth.
And may I add, nowadays through social media and just social norms in general, that we are now more affected by than we were before. Because before it literally was whatever your household and your family was doing.
Right.
Now you get to see everyone's life, everyone's highlights.
You're spot on. Like, cultural influence was always a big deal, but social media is
now you got both.
Steroids.
You know, my favorite example that we teach this in our, well, you teach it in certification, which means I'm going to get the tribe wrong. That's what I'm going to tell you right now. There's a tribe in Africa. The one, Rajasthan or the Zoe tribe?
It's India.
India.
And it's the Rajasthan tribe.
Is that not the one with the crabs?
Correct.
The other one.
The
Rajasthan. This is Brian.
The name was right.
This is Brian's lesson in our certification, not mine. But
I'd like to think I teach a few lessons.
No, no, no. My point being is that you teach this.
He shows up and this is what he does.
I don't use this example is what I'm saying, except for in context like this. Like, it's not my lesson that I teach. But I think it's so powerful. Like, the Rajasthan tribe. The younger a child dies, the greater the celebration.
Yeah.
So literally, if a baby is born and dies the next day, the entire city celebrates. Because in their culture, the afterlife is where the real life is.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And so
if you're born on Earth, it's considered penance.
Exactly,
you're fucked up.
So
somewhere.
And they can't kill themselves?
Correct.
Right. And so I think this is like one of the most powerful. I use this example all the time because if we're listening right now in North America, we're like, oh my God. And we're like, we're cuddling our kids closer to us, right? Because our brains can literally not conceive of that notion.
Yeah.
Right? It is traumatic, it's tragic, et cetera, et cetera.
Look at, I never want to die.
Right?
I don't even want to fly.
Right?
I don't even want to get an airplane.
But I think
dying.
That example gives
me alive.
It helps us really understand influence. If somewhere on the other side of the world, people are celebrating the death of a 3-day-old. Doesn't that mean that's possible for us? Which means if it's not possible for us, it's only because it's our influence.
Yeah.
And that's, there's such a freedom in that.
It kind of gives rise to there's no absolute truth.
Yeah.
There's the truth you know, which is a construct of where you were born and how you were raised and your environmental influences. And, but there's trepidation in that, but there's beauty in it.
Yeah.
Because inevitably it means you kind of, it's almost like, I don't know if you guys remember those books, Choose Your Own Adventure.
Yeah.
I used to love those books. You can choose your own adventure, but you have to be willing to, and that's the point.
And leads you back to the point, is your truth serving you?
Right.
Or is it not serving
right.
you? Right? And I think that that's where people are not, you know, I hate the term, like, we live in a woke world right now, because I think most people don't actually know what that means, right? It's when I say, like, you're living in this conscious awareness, right? Most people don't actually live that way at all, right?
They love saying it, though.
Exactly,
yeah.
Right? So I don't like the lingo nowadays, because I think the lingo has become just another form of rhetoric that people aren't really living into. But, you know, when we're talking about the whole reality of, like, it's an absolute truth, that means you can change your truth, but is your truth serving you?
Yeah.
Like, is this serving you?
Because if you can change it and it's not serving you, then you can change it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm gonna tell a quick story. I'm sure it's so deviating from where you want to go, Raph, and I'm sorry for that. But just to speak what you were talking about right there, maybe you've seen it, maybe you haven't. There's this viral video going on right now. It happened like literally 4 days ago. And it's this collision of narratives. Okay, so there's an African-American man in an elevator not wearing a mask. Okay?
Here we go.
And two elderly white ladies walk into the elevator, fully masked, with gloves. And they start yelling at him to put a mask on. So they're filming him and he's filming them, but you're looking at it from his camera. And he's saying, he's very calm. He's like, I'm not going to put a mask on. There's no mask mandates here. It's not the law. There's no mask mandates here. They're yelling and yelling. And all of a sudden, one of them, this little lady hits him. Hits him.
Stop.
Right in the face. And as soon as she does, she yells, Black Lives Matter.
What the fuck?
Confluence of narratives. But my point, you see my point?
Wow.
Is that, yeah. So we've got deadly...
There's
disease,
so much going on right now in this world.
Deadly disease, but I'm very connected to the wokeism and all of this. So I'm going to hit an African American man, but I'm going to scream Black Lives Matter after I hit him.
Wow.
Think about the influence.
Is this like a real video?
100%.
Oh, look it up.
Look it up, guys.
Look it up right now.
Think of the influence of all of that. Like, think of how much influence went in to her being panicked that he wasn't wearing a mask.
Which, you know...
To physically assaulting him, but then feeling a need to justify it right after.
That's not racist.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what cultural influence.
That's insane.
It never ceases to amaze me, whether we're in talking with friends, or we're on a podcast, or whether we're in our radio show. It always comes back to me to one thing, self-responsibility.
Yeah.
Personal responsibility.
Which is really like a four-letter word these days, but I'm down 100%.
It's okay. I can accept it. Like, I'm so not a part of the influence that I didn't even know that was a four-letter word. But, like, personal responsibility. Really, like, run your own race. Get to know yourself. Understand your influence. Understand your drivers. Understand yourself and your narratives. Then be the best fucking person you can be for yourself. Because
yes.
That's ultimately going to lead to you being the best person in your world around you.
I have two questions, but before I ask them, I want to ask about personal responsibility. Is personal responsibility and self-awareness the same?
No, not to me. Were you
well,
suggesting
I think that the personal responsibility links in to having self-awareness. That's where, I don't think they're the same thing. I think that personal responsibility implies that you're going to practice understanding and owning self-awareness.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
Let me speak more directly to that question, though. If I'm self-sabotaging constantly, but I don't know why, right? I can heap self-responsibility onto that equation. It's not going to change anything.
Right.
Because in reality, there's an unconscious bias that I'm not aware of. So we need to gain more self-awareness, which is we have to be self-responsible for.
In order to.
But it's actually one of the problems is that when people don't achieve their goals, they're not showing simplicity plus consistency. Generally speaking, we inform them they need to be more self-responsible and or they need to be more motivated.
Mm.
Neither of which is ever the problem.
Right.
Right? Self-awareness is the answer. Why are you self-sabotaging?
Yeah.
Like, what's the reason?
You know, and like, what does that mean?
Yeah.
Right? And that's another one of my... it's the reason that we created the Eliminate Your Limits process, because one of the challenges that we observed was the lack of process in acquiring self-awareness,
right?
Like you can't just sit down and expect that self-awareness is going to come to you magically and mystically, right? There's there's a process to it. There's we've developed our entire system around it, because it doesn't just happen. It's a proactive process, right? You don't just happen to lose weight because you're thinking about losing weight. There's stuff you got to do. It's the same thing with self-awareness. Self-awareness has become this like ethereal, like airy-fairy thing, right? Like
right.
Self-awareness. What's this magical thing that is self-awareness? And the problem with that is people think that they're trying to achieve a certain level of enlightenment and they're somehow messing up, right? But they're trying.
You don't know why you're eating liquor.
But, they're trying.
Don't worry about enlightenment right now.
But
let's figure out the fucking liquor.
They're trying to achieve spiritual enlightenment.
Yeah.
Without knowing how to achieve spiritual enlightenment, and then they're beating themselves up that it's not just happening, right? Which is the reason we built our system.
Yeah.
Because we're like, how do we give a process to people to get there and to keep going along the way, right?
Yeah.
As opposed to just, you know, I'm going to sit here.
And before you ask your next question, I do want to say, we are going to link everything that they do. So I know that, like, for everyone that's watching live and everyone that watches after, it's like, you know, we're talking about eliminate your limits and their coaching and their stuff.
I know. That thing's brave recording.
I don't want people to be like, wait, what is that? And what is that? Like, don't worry about it. We're going to like everything they do, where you can find them, how they do, like,
I'm really hoping Raf and Laiz know where to find us.
We do.
We have a website, I'm sure.
Are you guys on that internet thing?
I think so.
The World Wide Web. We're going to link it all, so don't worry.
This will piggyback and bring us back in. So is that happening as a result of what people see across social media, like this need for self-awareness or being woke, or even the results that they crave based on all of the things that they see? And then is the speed thing related to how fast they think it should happen versus whatever they made up, or intrinsically, like, I think I should be here by this time because so-and-so is also.
Yeah,
you know, there's a lot to
It's like we've all turned into teenagers again.
I agree.
Media gratification, right?
Let me.
Or wanting, comparing, right? Like, you see that perfect looking girl on Instagram, and it's like, damn, I never looked that put together, right? But it's like, you know, we're constantly comparing, like we used to do in high school, except now we do it just here.
Yeah, it's so much easier.
You don't have to go anywhere. Yeah, you know, right? It's so much easier to feel like shit about yourself in these days.
So let's be honest, right? Like, let me give an example, because I'm sure you were going to go five different ways with that as well. So, but you know, one of the examples that I can give to that, and this, it actually comes back to responsibility as well. You know, I will get asked often on social media, like, what are your macros, right? What are your current macros? I never divulge my macros, ever. And the reason being is because I don't ever want people to think that they can just replicate what I'm doing and receive the results that I have, because I've had a whole process to get there, right? So I'm very responsible on social media with what I put forth. But I think what we've seen on social media, the unfortunate reality is a lot of people are trying to get rich, right? Mm-hmm. And so they're pumping out information and do this and do this and do this. Yeah. And you could be like me and you could be like me. And somewhere in this mix of it, we've lost what we're actually doing to the human on the other side.
Yes.
Like, we are fucking them up.
Yeah.
For a lack of better words. Like, you just confuse.
You're comparing your everyday to someone's highlight 100%, reel.
You just confuse. Mm-hmm. It is so irresponsible for me to tell anybody, you should go do this. Right? Because, like, in terms of, like, a replication of what I'm doing.
Right.
Because I don't know their history. I know nothing about them. Right? But we live in this, like, get-rich-quick world. Get skinny quick world, mm-hmm. that people are, and so we have like the predators and we have the prey, and I hate to say it that way, but it's one or the other, right? Like, mm-hmm. it's presented itself in this online world in the last like what 25 years, maybe something a little bit less,
probably less.
That, you know, like there I believe there are a percentage of
coachages.
That could be a new thing.
I like that name.
There's a percentage of coachages. There's a percentage of coaches in the world who really are there to deliver impact. But I'm just going to say it. There's a percentage who are there who think it's a marketing plan.
Right, 100%.
You know?
100% true.
Do you think, because even what you said, right? Like, we see that a lot. Not only with macros or what's your diet, see with clients. People ask, what are you eating? Just tell me what you're eating, right? What's your workout look like? It's always the same thing. Like, you're missing how long it took to get there.
Yes.
No one is asking, hey, how long have you been on your plan?
Yeah.
They want to know what you're doing right now.
Right.
But nobody is asking, how long did it take for you to get from wherever you were to right now?
100%.
And Because if they were, they wouldn't be asking what you're doing right now.
Right.
They would be asking,
where did you start? Exactly.
Right.
What was the first thing you did?
So is that how we do a lot of things?
Yes.
You know?
For 1,000,000%. You know, I think a lot like you guys in business, Carrie and I have grown our business very, very prominently from referrals. Like, we joke about, do we have a website? I think we have a website. Do we have a website? But in reality, like, we don't do a lot of marketing. We don't do a lot of externalizing.
You do good work.
We do good work. That's and it. The people we work for, and they seek results, they tell people. And our business has grown leaps and bounds because of that. But the reason I say that is that I deal with a lot of entrepreneurs. And I am forever preaching to them the long game. Like, the reason you're out $12,000 this year hiring coaches who overpromise but underdelivered is because you bought their shit. You bought their headline. That they're going to make you 5 figures a month in 30 days. No, they're not. You bought the headline, now you know. So I'm going to tell you the exact opposite. I'm going to tell you, give me 3 years. Give me 3 years at half that investment, and I'll make it, you can have a six-figure company, because that's how long it takes. And so I think, like you guys, not dissimilar from us, I actually see the trend going the exact other way.
Yeah.
I do. I see the hyperbole coming down.
The pendulum has to swing.
It has to swing. It's going so far this way, it's starting to come back. And I think that consumer psychology is changing. I think 92% of people who set goals don't achieve them. Mm. And that they're starting to wake up to there's a reason for that, you know? But whenever I work with anybody at anything, my first question to them is, what do you want to achieve? And they tell me. My second question is, why do you want to achieve it? Mm-hmm. If you can't answer that, we can't start the process. Because why I want to achieve this is almost always based on cultural influence. Like you were talking about earlier, I want to have a $1 million company by the end of this year.
Why?
You don't make $22,000 a year right now, but you want to have a $1 million company in the next 11 months?
It's a massive jump.
Why?
Yeah.
Well, that's not that dissimilar to... I want to weigh what I weighed in high school.
Right.
But you're 68. People say that all the time.
You know?
I believe
But you are so far from high school.
Am I the only person who hated high school? Why would people
hate
high school?
I hated high school. There's nothing about that I want to go back to.
But is it?
I told Brie to bring you a drink.
Oh, shut up.
It's a different glass, but we're good.
You're the sweetest ever. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Is it because that was the peak? Did you peak there?
That was not my peak.
No, I'm not saying.
No, but I'm saying, I think you're right.
It is most people's peak.
You know,
peak, right?
Is it like,
I think people go back to that. You know, if your 18 year old self is your peak, like, you need a new peak, girl.
I'm actually agreeing with Lays. I'm agreeing with Lays. No, but I'm just agreeing with this.
Girl, let's chat.
Right? You peaked at 18.
I didn't know what the fuck was happening at 18.
But you know what? Let me just say this. Like, I agree with Lays. I actually don't think most people think they peaked in high school. I think they're supposed to think they peaked in high school.
Yeah. Let me say something else though. Or after high school, let's be honest. Like, it was downhill from there.
Shit goes downhill. Because, I was just gonna say,
like you go to high. Like, so here's the thing, right? Like, you graduate high school, you go to college, you get a job, you have kids, you live with your kids, you have your husband or your wife or whatever. Like, nobody keeps creating. No, that's
we're
not
growing.
True. Very
doing
few
things for themselves.
Keep creating
growing,
and
evolving.
Keep growing, right? Yep. So for a lot of people, I want to say a lot of people, I think it is their
but
peak
that
in
it's
high
also
school.
Your social circle, because let me tell you this, a lot of women say it all the time. It's not the same after kids. Your body's not, let me tackle the body thing. It's your body's not the same after kids.
Yeah, mine was
no,
better.
No, mine is a million times better.
Exactly, that's my story.
And
too.
It's on purpose. It's not a fucking accident, right? Yeah. Like, you work toward creating something that you never had before.
But your relationship is not the same after kids. It's better. After 30, it's supposed to go down. After 40, it's funny. And if you're an outlier, you're wrong, or you did something.
Or you've got good genetics.
How many people do you chat with?
Somehow lucky gets fit in there somewhere. Right.
How many people do you chat with? They're like, I'm turning 40. You're like, oh, you're done.
Oh, I tell people all the
he
time.
He says it all the time.
I'm like, shit, you're 40?
Why are we even talking?
You're not going to make it much longer.
You know.
He's like, you're almost done.
You're almost done.
But it's that.
You're
like,
so right, though. Absolutely.
Your body does not have to be worse after kids. It can be better than it ever has. Your relationship, your business, your friendships, the things you do for you, your hobbies, like... It doesn't have to go that way because that's how your mom and your grandma and your aunt all lived, miserable ever after, talking
that's
about everybody else. Like, no.
You know, it speaks to, you know, I use this, I do a lot of relationship coaching, right? And I always say this in relationships. You fall in love, but you create a relationship,
mm-hmm.
right? And the same is true for everything in your life, right? You've got to keep creating.
Yes.
The second you stop creating, where, like, I teach this in our own process. Our system is called Eliminate Your Limits. But the entire Eliminate Your Limits system is designed that once you've eliminated your limits, now you can create and you can keep going because it's not enough to be aware. If you're aware that this is how I sabotage myself, that's great. But how are you going to change that? And beyond the change, I mean, it's like the most common thing. You lose 10 pounds, you gain 20 pounds back.
Mm. Right.
Right? Beyond that 10 pounds, what are you going to keep creating? It's a continual process.
And if you look at that, even with what you were saying, right, you're almost conditioned to... You get out of high school, you go to college, you get a good job, you get married, you know, and you kind of live out your days until you retire.
Yep.
It's very parallel.
Was like,
right.
I know.
But it's very parallel to I want to lose whatever amount of weight because that's what I weighed in high school, or that's what I weighed when I got married.
Before
it's like
kids.
That's it. Like that is the limit.
And you can't go beyond. You can't.
You can't
be better
go
than that.
Because I tell people all the time, I'm like, well, what if you lost half of that and look better? Well, that would kind of be okay,
that's
but that's not really.
Right.
It's not really what
I want.
Not, I'm like, so you're telling me that if you lost half of that and looked better, you would not be happy?
Yeah.
No. You know?
Yeah,
so what are we looking for?
Yeah.
Like, what is it that we're actually looking for?
And even in relationships, people probably compare their marriage
but that's the same
to
thing.
Their
you
high school sweetheart
right,
they had
like,
fun with at the football game.
But it's the same
right?
thing.
It's
you
like,
got married.
This is real life.
Or I accomplished the thing. It's like, well, this is it. I did the thing. You know, what about after?
It doesn't have to
you know,
get
or
worse.
You got the job. And it's like, well, I hate it here.
Yeah.
You know, I have to come here every day.
Yeah.
What about after?
You know, I actually read an article one time that the most relatable character in TV history was Al Bundy, for all the reasons we're talking about. Because his glory days were in high school, and although we all don't sell shoes, the metaphor...
Right, he hated it.
He hated his job.
But he went every day.
Went every day, punched
the
clock.
Ted Bundy.
No, Al Bundy. Al Bundy.
I'm like, people want to be Ted Bundy? That's weird.
Married with children. Married. But he was the most relatable character in TV history, because 90% of Americans were like, they saw themselves in him.
You know, and let's like circle this back to one second, back to the absolute truth, right? We've bought the truth that this is the way it's supposed to be.
Yes.
Right? You get married, you have kids, this is just the way it's supposed to be. You know, and one of the things that we always talk about is there's no normal. There's common, but there's not normal.
Right.
It's not normal to be stressed. It's not normal to be unhappy in your marriage. It's not normal to be 40 and overweight, not be able to lose weight.
Mm-hmm.
Is it common?
Yes.
But it's not normal. And if it's not normal, that means that there exists a different possibility for you.
Yes.
And that's where I bring it back to self-responsibility.
Yeah.
Right? If
sure.
you want something different for yourself, like, don't stop until you find it.
And the reason I pull it back to self-awareness is you don't always realize you're handicapping yourself with your language. Right?
I mean,
and
I don't think you ever do.
I love that.
Let me add this, especially with you guys, because you guys are in the fitness industry, like, and I'm sure you're aware of the studies, but you know that notion of like men can't gain muscle past 35 or 40?
Right, right.
It's scientifically inaccurate.
Right.
It is absolutely inaccurate. Like
I've heard that women lose a lot. You get like you lose your skin elasticity.
Well, it's a selling point now because there's a little bit more awareness to hormonal decline over time.
Well, testosterone.
Right. Which is normal, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
That's normal,
yeah.
Right? Not common, it's normal.
You never heard that before?
And then, you know,
men can't get muscle past 40.
It's what we were talking about before. We were talking about religion before.
Yeah.
And they cherry-pick
yes.
one line,
yeah.
right? And then it's been inserted and it's become common conversation,
yeah.
you know? And it's
just
not true.
It's scientifically inaccurate, but it's been adopted as a...
Yeah.
But it's been adopted as a culture... Sorry, what?
No, I caught myself before I interrupted you. You know, because what you're saying, it speaks to, like, the number of times in that scenario, I hear women say, like, you know, well, I can't, you know, possibly start physique training at 40 years old.
Right. Where everything changes after 40.
Muscle, right? You just reminded me of that, like, there's so many people who say that kind of stuff, and they just don't recognize that that's not the truth behind it.
Mm-hmm.
But I've never heard that in my entire life.
So... Just to kind of like bring it back full circle.
How did this start?
The person looking to have a transformation of some sort, whether it be weight loss or strength acquisition or insert term, right? Like they're looking to do something because they are not content with their present, right?
Yep.
They're looking to do something. Forget about the what. Does it start up here before you start with the mechanics, or can they start with both and just have more awareness of that the two things go together and you're only going to get as far as your mind allows you to get?
That's a great question. So let me start by saying this. You can be positively dissatisfied.
Mm-hmm.
So like, I'm a powerlifter. I'm 48 years old, and that's...
Well, you're almost done.
I'm almost done, according to most
it's
people.
It's over.
Right?
Don't expect
Wait.
To gain more muscle.
And I've always joked that, you know, I've had a very rich athletic history and very successful, but my peak athletic years aren't going to be until my mid-50s. Mm. I believe people think I'm crazy when I say that, but I'm like, why? Like, tell me why I'm crazy. So my point is, I'm always aspiring, and that doesn't necessarily mean I'm dissatisfied. Carrie coined a term, positively dissatisfied. I'm very happy with myself, but I love to challenge what can be next. Right?
So I'm constantly creating.
Yes, I want to speak to 2% of people who understand that, right? Mm-hmm. Who live that. Mm-hmm. My best experiences with clients, my best experiences with self, is when mindset and action towards a goal are concurrent. Mm-hmm. Pull them together.
Combined.
As opposed to one before the other.
Yeah, you know, I that's exactly where I would have gone with that comment as well. You're like the king of equations, right? Simplicity plus consistency.
It's funny because I got F's in math.
Equals math. But I've actually started using the equation mindset plus action equal momentum, mm-hmm. right? Because I do think that when you're, you know, when you have someone who's coming to you who is unbelievably dissatisfied in their body, right? They do feel disgusting. They do feel all these things. If you were to say to them, like, we're just going to work on your mindset first. What's going to end up happening is they're going to be too challenged by the fact that they're not actually taking steps towards the change.
Yes.
That you're not going to get momentum in their mindset either at the same time, right? So
because they're going to block it.
100%. So I agree completely. I think that the beauty of interlacing mindset and the action together is really what creates that momentum and change. And I think that there's times where the mindset stuff elevates and maybe sometimes even the action stuff diminishes a little bit. Like we shift our focus a little bit, but I think both of them have to be worked on a parallel plane.
I love that.
You always say blissfully dissatisfied.
I love that.
So one of the things, like, we always talk to a lot of people that are on the edge, right? They're like, they've arrived to us somehow, someone they know, and they're like, do I move forward? Do I call? Do I make a move? You know, what do you guys say to that person that's like right there, borderline, about to make that decision, mm-hmm. about to make the call, but they're like not doing it, you know? Yeah. They're just not taking the step.
Sure. I mean, I can get philosophical on that, but regret is a bitch and it's forever.
Yes. So I love that.
It's
a bitch and
preach. Yeah. I can text you tomorrow and say, listen, guys, I'm so sorry. I've invested in you, but it doesn't feel right. Is it okay if we suspend? And maybe I can do that. That's easy.
Right.
But actions I don't take, things I don't try, regret's a motherfucker. It really is.
Yeah.
And you can't get the time back. There's three assets we all have. We all have money. We all have time. We all have energy. We hoard money. We sacrifice time. We sacrifice energy. We shouldn't. The most important commodities we own are time and energy. So, you know, once you delay the decision for a week, that's a fucking week you're never getting back.
Yeah.
Like.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Let's go. That's a, what is that called?
Soundbite.
A tweetable? Soundbite.
Soundbite. Yeah. Hashtag regret is a motherfucker.
This is like a Brian Carey moment. Hashtag.
Hashtag.
We never even talked about how, like, sorry, the backstory of all of us.
I know.
Why do we start there and we didn't even, like, talk about the backstory?
I still haven't even introduced you guys. I'm a terrible host.
You know what? We didn't even talk about
that. Do you even know who these people are?
What you were saying there, like, I think that, and I'm sure that this is, I actually think this is a direct quote from you, that the pain of staying the same is way worse than the pain of the fear of changing.
Yes.
You know, yeah, like, it takes time and it takes, you know, even I have moments when I, like, you know, I have been prepping for like 6 years now, right? Cutting and like, I only started competing again a year this year. But, like, even every time I embark on a new cut, I'm like, what the fuck am I doing?
Why am
I doing this, right? Like, so I feel the anxiety of starting something new, but the key is to keep going.
It's human nature. Right? It's having the tools. Yeah. It's being able to pick up on what's happening, how you're feeling, how you're thinking.
Absolutely.
That really matters.
You know, after 329 episodes of Brian and Carrie in the Morning.
How do you remember that?
Because it's the same number of insane forever.
You guys didn't do one more to go to 330? Like, my OCD mind cannot handle 329. I'm sorry. Please do one more episode. Make this it.
We actually had one more in the books, but we started talking about it at 329 just to say.
Oh, my God. No,
I wasn't in charge.
I can't handle that.
Well, I just came to the show.
The point I'm raising is that I learned that even if one person learned one thing that was sustainably important to them, so I'm saying this for a reason, the hopes that it hits somebody, The thing I think is worth noting about should I dive in or should I delay and wait and think is that, like, I'd like to think I'm reasonably successful. I certainly know a lot of very successful people. We all have doubt. Mm. None of us are sure. None of us know how it's going to happen or how we're going to make it work or how we're going to do it. There's not a successful person I know that doesn't have moments of trepidation. Mm. The only thing is they don't stop.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
So maybe somebody need to hear that today.
Yeah.
And if you're uncertain, good. Welcome to the fucking club. We're all uncertain.
Literally. No one's got it figured out.
No.
Yeah. You're the one who shared this with me years ago. I want to say, I think it was a Harvard Review that did a study on the difference between billionaires. Like, what made billionaires stand out amongst others in the world?
Well, what was the unifying trait?
And this is not about money, right? Because I don't want people to hear billionaires. Oh, I don't want to be a billionaire, right? But if you're a billionaire, there's a certain level of excellence that you have. Right?
You've
adopted a certain level of mindset of whatever. And the one differentiating factor was that they make decisions quickly.
Right.
And it's not that the decisions that they make are guaranteed. It's that they trust themselves enough that if the decision was wrong, they can fix it.
Yeah.
And I think that actually comes back to something that I always talk about. It's like, you don't need to trust everybody else out there. You need to trust yourself.
Yeah.
You need to trust your own judgment, your own ability to assess where you're at, where you're going, and just make the decision. Get started. Like, when I hear, I'll be honest, like, you know, in my Unstoppable Women program, right? Like, I'll hear women who are like, I want to join the group, but like, I just don't know if now's the right time. And I'm like, now's the right time to take care of you? Like, what's...
When's going to be a better time?
You should have done it.
Like, my brain goes like, what else is there?
Yeah.
Like, you are the be-all and end-all of your world around you, but you don't know if this is the right time to put you first.
Yeah.
Right? And it's just, that goes back to that social influence, right? The bills have to get paid, the job has to be done,
the
kids
have to
be
taken care of.
Exactly, right? And like, so like, make decisions. Don't be afraid to make decisions knowing that you'll find your way out on the other side if you have to, right? You're gaining information along the way.
Data.
Information, feedback, data, exactly.
And before, Lais is going to ask her final question, but before she does...
Ooh, nervous. It's like you guys knew what the final question was.
How do we know each other?
I can tell.
But before she does...
Am I directing that question toward Carrie's competing? Because it's usually...
No, you've got to like regenerate it like for this... So you've got a few seconds because you said something now.
On the spot,
she said something now that I have a question about.
Yeah.
You know when you said, like, this isn't about money because it's like, oh, I don't want to be a billionaire, right? You know how often we hear, well, I don't want to be that ripped. Well, I don't want to look like that.
I don't really need a six pack.
I don't really need this. You know, I don't want to do that much.
Who doesn't want to be a fucking billionaire or have a six pack? I'm sorry.
So my question, like the question is,
good point.
Is that thought coming from a place of I don't believe I could, so I'm just like,
so yeah,
I want to take it off the table.
You know, I firmly believe. So, like, let me. I'm just gonna jump in on that. Did you just spill your water all over your face?
We are live.
Drink water on bourbon day.
It's okay.
No, I was look.
You spilled tea.
That's why you're my bestie because you would point that out,
right?
Yeah.
What were we talking about?
So is the thought process
the belief
of
system.
I can't,
right?
I don't want that. Like, you're already saying don't want
because
that
because you don't
much.
Think you can have
so
it.
So here's this is actually probably a really important distinction to make because I think that, yes, I believe it is a belief system, right? That they don't believe that they can have that.
100%.
Now, the mistake that a lot of people make is saying, yeah, but you should still set that as your goal. The problem with that, though, is that for certain people, that creates a cognitive dissonance, right? Like, I am 300 pounds overweight.
Could you explain what cognitive dissonance is?
Could you give the actual...
Are you studying?
Oh, my God. I'm not... This is so not the realm of my... Cognitive dissonance is essentially you...
You
get presented information, and it's too far away from the scope of what you can possibly believe. So it creates this huge gap.
Unconscious.
Yeah, this unconscious gap of here's where I'm at, here's where I want to go. There's no way I could get there, right? So that's what cognitive dissonance is. So it's a little bit too far outside the realm of their belief system. So you have someone who's 300 pounds, right? And you have, you just have a counselor, some counselor who says, like, set a goal that you're going to be 120 pounds by whenever, the spring, right? But that person starts to say, okay, I'm going to be 120 pounds by the spring. The problem is that their unconscious mind is too way far away from that, that they're building up too many barriers of the actual reason why they're not going to achieve it. So there's too much resistance along the way.
Yeah.
So can anybody achieve a six pack? Yeah, probably. Can anybody make seven figures? Yeah, probably. But if it's too far beyond your belief system, what ends up happening is too much resistance gets created. So it's far better to build a micro goal or like a goal that's closer to home and then reassess and readjust. So in my programming, the way I work is I do every quarter, we reassess. And we all heard like Junior upstairs, right? Something's going on upstairs. Every quarter with the women that I coach, we reassess. Where are you at? Where are you going? Where are you at? Where are you going? So we don't ever have that gap of, because like even for some of the women, like where do they want to be at the end of 2022? Like is way too far away for them to think about right now.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that interesting how only adults do that? You never get your 6-year-old that's jumping upstairs and expect him to act like he's 16 or 10.
Yeah.
Right? You know there is only so much you can handle at a time.
That's
like,
a great, you know, I was going to ask this question. Again, I'm sorry.
I love it when Raph gets excited because he's
I'm like, oh my God, all of a sudden he's up here.
Well, because she said it and I wasn't thinking about it like this. How do you guys feel about the word or the term realistic goal?
Oh,
I don't like it.
Because she was talking about Junior, and if you've ever chatted with Junior, chat with Junior one day. Realistic for him.
You're going to work for him.
Right? Yes. Like realistic goal for him and realistic goal for other people is very different.
Yes.
You know? But even... Is that term again just thrown?
It's totally
as,
thrown.
Yeah, as
that's
a really good
question. But I'm not.
Or is it safety?
It's both, okay. And that's part of the problem. Is like I'm not going to answer the way people might think I'm about to, which is, you know, perhaps the perception is I'm going to say make unrealistic goals, like push your boundaries, which partially is true, but the other partiality is that you could be playing way too safe, way too safe. So your perception of realistic...
Like my goal tomorrow is to wake up.
Yeah, like, okay, yeah, exactly.
Great.
Right?
You're not walking a fine line at that point, right?
It's almost like realistic puts people into this weird compress of ceiling floor.
Yeah.
Mm. It's a very small window of what they think they're capable of. So I like what Carrie said there a lot, and I do a very similar thing with all the people I work with as well, is that we establish a 12-month intention, but we only indicate it 90 days at a time. Like, I want to make $100,000 this year. That feels so unrealistic. Well, good. Let's leave it over there then. What is important this first 90 days?
Mm-hmm.
So we incrementally move people along. By the third quarter, people are like, holy shit, I'm going to do six figures.
Yeah.
Because we made an intention, but we didn't make it the priority. Mm-hmm. Right. The 90 days was the priority.
Yeah. We did.
The incremental.
I was just going to say, you know, what I often talk about is like you want to set that vision that's enough that it makes you uncomfortable, but not so much that it shuts you down.
Mm.
Right? Like if it's shutting you down, it's
like
probably,
it's paralyzing you.
There's probably too much in between
right.
you.
Like there's no way I'm going to do this.
Exactly, right?
Yeah.
But then you but it should own. Make you a little uncomfortable.
For sure.
Right? Like it should make you uncomfortable and challenging yourself.
Well, let me go back to something you guys were talking about before regarding like I'd never want to be a billionaire. And the reason it matters in the whole context of realistic, this is what I was referring to. Like the only people who say I would never want to be a billionaire are so fucking far away from being billionaires.
Right.
It's not even close. Like, and the only real, I mean, there's always outliers, but the majority of people who say like, I'd never want a six pack are so fucking far away from a six pack. It's not even funny.
Because if you were closer to that threshold, you would be like, well,
now it's realistic.
Now I want to get it.
You know what
I mean?
Now it's realistic.
Yeah, right? You know? So I find it funny society-wide. It's always like these...
The extreme.
The extremes of people who are saying, well, I would never want that. And it reminds me of Schwarzenegger. I'd never want to look like you. Don't worry, you won't.
Right.
It's never going to happen.
There's no danger there.
Right.
Right? But it's a very interesting thing that we project that way but don't recognize it as a ceiling floor issue of realistic.
Right, and it comes down to a protection mechanism.
Of course.
Right? It comes back down to that safety. Exactly. Yeah. Like, we feel safe if we're not challenging our own internal status quo too much.
Mm. Can I add one thing? Because we keep, and I love that we keep coming back to safety, but safety is movable. I think we should say that.
Yes.
Safety is movable.
Yes.
I'm safe in the fact that I said when I first started powerlifting 2 years ago that my goal is to win the world championships, but only because I have 25 years of moving my own goalposts.
100%.
I don't feel unsafe saying I'm going to win worlds. Right. It feels hard. Mm-hmm. It feels like it's going to stretch me.
Right.
I don't feel unsafe. Right. My brain isn't trying to reel me back in. Mm-hmm. But that's what happens. You incrementally move things.
Right.
And the more you do, the more you're able to accomplish.
And you know, like, that's where life happens.
Of course.
Yes.
Right? Like, that's where life happens in that moment, right? Mm-hmm. You know, when I started competing again, like, I retired from competing 10 years ago, right? And when I decided to start competing again, it started off as like, you know, I actually was like, you know, let me just get ready to get on stage. You know, like, I'm not even going to get on stage. Just, I want to feel prepped like I get on stage. And I was like, then it went to like, maybe I should get back on stage. And before I even got on stage, it was like, now I want to win my pro card. Before I even won my pro card, it's like, now I'm going for queen, right? Like, as I evolved in the process, before I was even there, I had already, like, augmented my, or moved my goalpost, right?
So you moved reality.
Yeah. 100%.
And that's, I think,
and that's
really
what happens when you
point.
Get that equity. So if we're coming back to compliance and consistency and simplicity, the more reps you put in the bank, the more equity you're putting in the bank to pull on later in your belief system to create.
We say that all the time with people on our team, on Team Forever. If you started talking to us however many months ago and we showed you a picture of what you were going to look like X amount of months later, you would have never believed
100%,
us.
Absolutely.
You would have been like, there's no fucking way. Yet when we get to that point months later, you're like, yeah, but this.
I want this and I want this and I want this.
Right? And it's like, yeah, it's a work in progress. Right. But like, could you even believe that you came this far? Right? Because you always say your goals are moving targets, you know?
And then is that realistic goal or thing that someone's looking for based on when they peaked?
Yeah, you're absolutely
right.
You know,
it's like, is it limited to, well, in high school I could do 10 pull-ups and 50 push-ups. If I could do that now, that would be...
Sure.
But that's not realistic because I work 9 to 5 and I have 3 kids.
Exactly.
And I'm over 40.
Right.
Muscles going down.
There's no way you could get any stronger after 40.
So,
but I'm so sorry to interrupt. I was going to say you run into oddities of brain science with all that stuff though, because
there's so much to talk about.
There is, because consciously,
next week at this time.
Because consciously we live forward, but unconsciously we live backwards.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
We project forward, but unconsciously we're stuck in
the good old days.
Exactly.
We're gauging our future based on our past success, right?
Yeah, and memory is fallible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, I think I remember what I was like when I was 18.
You can't even fucking remember what you did last week.
People always ask, like, what were you like when you had? I don't know, I had for breakfast yesterday.
Yes.
But people don't realize how fallible memory is.
Yeah.
We create
or you remember the things you want to remember.
Yeah. And you only remember
the highlights. It's like when people die. That's my favorite. Not that I like death.
Yeah.
But you go to a funeral, no one has anything negative to say about Sally.
The person.
Right? Sally was a bitch, but all of a sudden today, because she's dead, she was a great person.
It's
she
a great
was all
example.
This. I'm like, why don't people say this shit when they're alive?
It's a great example. Because
it's either not true or people have it all backwards. Say the things to people like while it's happening.
Yeah.
Right? So it's kind of like the same thing. It's like we remember all this stuff from when we're 18 or in high school that is either not there or was such a small percentage of it, and we choose to think about that now when it's gone.
That's a really good example. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to say this. Dr. Leonard Mlodinow wrote a book called Subliminal.
Mm-hmm.
If you ever want to realize how much what you think you remember about high school, as an example, is so not true, read that book.
Mm-hmm.
He punches 17 different holes in what memory really is.
It's that whole grass is greener concept, right?
In many ways, yeah.
You know, the grass is greener on the other side, or the grass is greener back then. Mm. You know, like I had a client that I was talking to this week who's in the process of building their business, right? And they're challenged because they're building their business and all that stuff. And I'm like, do you want to go back to what you were doing before in a 9-to-5 job? Because you hated that.
That you hated.
Right.
Yeah.
Why are we like grandiose? Like, why are we talking about that in grandiose vision? The thing that you hated that you left all of a sudden looks more appealing right now because what you're in right now is hard, right?
Yeah,
right now it's hard, right?
Yeah.
But what you got to remember is that was hard too. So choose your heart.
Choose your
and
heart.
And that happens all the time, even with Junior. I'll see baby videos and I'm like, oh my God, let me go back to that. And it's like, fuck no, I don't want to go back to that. Like, he is
that
grown.
That came with a bunch of other things.
That came
yeah.
with, like,
right?
You remember that cute little video where he's like squirming and he looks cute, but it's like, you don't remember the sleepless nights. And not that there's anything wrong with that, but like now you're in a different phase and it's easy to miss that phase without remembering all that phase came with and who you were and what you had to do. Versus now where it's like, okay, this is the phase. Let's make sure I don't miss this phase, right? Because yeah. I don't, like, why do we ever want to go backwards? Like, you should never want to go backwards in any way.
Yeah, exactly.
Was this your cue for my final question?
You know,
question?
Can I say?
I
no more saying. No. You have a final question for 25 minutes.
Lais just said backwards, and honestly, I heard the most powerful quote last week, and I have been sharing this everywhere. Life can only be understood backwards, but it must be lived forwards. Mm-hmm. And I think that's so powerful. Yes, there is so much feedback from your past, but take the feedback in order to live forward and create the life that you want to create.
I love that. So always my final question on our show is a lot of times we, you know, interview our competitors and the people on the team, and we always say, like, what is the most powerful thing about your journey competing or your journey to the stage?
But I think that that's a very powerful question for them.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Because this is a mindset expert
episode,
right? You guys do a lot more than that. What is the most powerful thing about mindset to you? Is that what you were going to say?
That's a great question.
Where were you going? Give us go.
What I was going to say is, what is, like, just piggybacking on her, like, what is the most powerful thing that you guys have seen happen as a result of someone taking control of their mindset?
Okay. I can answer that.
I think it's kind of the same.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's a
great question. The way I worded it was different, but I guess
one's conceptual, one's practical.
Okay. She already figured it out.
I have a million.
Concept? Okay, go.
I have a million different examples or ideas for the answer, but I'm going to use somebody by name, but only because they themselves tell this story. Lee Patterson.
Oh.
So Lee Patterson is a 40-something-year-old woman in Scotland. She's got not two young sons.
In Scotland?
Scotland, yeah. One of her sons is in his early 20s. The other one is now, I think, 14. And about 5-6 years ago in that ballpark, she was quite literally kneeling on her kitchen floor, composing a suicide note to her boys. Just telling them that after years of being abused and tortured by men and all kinds of horrible things that she had happened to her, she just didn't have the will to go on. And she was sorry. She loved them. She never wouldn't love them. But she needed to end the pain she was in. Just so happened her laptop was on the floor beside her, and she happened upon a video on YouTube from you and I, Brian and Carrie. And she was just intrigued enough with these tattooed freaks to sit and listen for a second. And it got her thinking that maybe she'd suspend finishing the letter and listen to what we had to say that day. She emailed us.
It's our Lee Patterson anniversary this week.
Is it really? And I'm only telling the story because she tells the story. I would never disclose otherwise, but
this
is the story she tells. That she emailed us and told us the story I just told you. And you know, she became part of her tribe, and she watched every episode of Brian and Carrie in the morning. She started counting the wins and doing her four pillars, and now we're what, 7 years later? A little less, maybe.
I think
five or six years later. And she is happy, healthy. She works as a mindset coach. I'm sorry?
Off all her medication.
She's 32 pills per day.
Wow.
Of anti-anxiety, antidepressant. She's off all of them. Her psychiatrist wants to hire her to help her teach his patients our system.
Wow.
Because it's the only thing he's seen work for people in that mental state. So I'm not saying that to, champion us, right? What we always tell people is that the system works if you work it. Lee Patterson worked it. She was simple and consistent and compliant every day. She did the things we asked her to do, and 5-6 years later, she's got a new lease on life. So I think that answers your question, but that is my number one story to tell.
That's amazing.
And she's a credit. I mean, she's a credit to humanity, that one, boy. I just love that woman.
I love that. And credit to you guys is amazing work.
I don't remember the question I got coming.
Ask me the question again, guys.
Go, babe.
What's the most powerful thing about mindset that you've seen, you know, either like example wise, like in context, or even esoterically, like why should you stop for a second and really think about your thoughts?
There are so many examples. Like I think we like giving real life examples because I think that real life example humanizes the experience. But you know, I've worked for years with a client of mine who was an addict, like severe alcoholic, 25 years, on all the medications, done all the AA, done everything. And you know, a couple of years ago, he stopped drinking the day we started working together, which was 4 years ago. We celebrated his 4 year sobriety this year. And you know, he said to me, he goes, "I've been sober before, but I've never been happy and sober." And that for me speaks to all of it, right? Like one of the things that I think that I've really understood is that human beings fight for their pain because they don't know another way out of that.
Yeah, that's great.
And in the mindset work that we do, it's really about moving people to fighting for their happy. And there's a certain amount of equity that you have of belief in that possibility. But once someone's fighting for happy, there's no stopping them. And that for me really is teaching people how to fight for happy and the process to get there.
Hashtag fight for happy.
Ooh, I like that.
I love it.
Can I say one more thing?
Yes, please.
You rephrased the question. I was like, I love that.
Sorry.
In society, we keep moving the goalposts. And what I mean by that is depression meant this 30 years ago. It means this now. And in 20 years, it might mean this. And what I see, what my problem is that you have a bad day, a bad week, a bad month, you have a diagnosis and medication. The reason people should be mindful of the way they think and what they think is not to avoid diagnostics or avoid medication, but to realize that this is an incredibly energetic universe, and there are very limited numbers of absolute truths. And that the reality you know is nothing more than a product of what you've been thinking dominantly for the last number of months or years. That you actually construct your reality based on what you think. So you must become aware of what you think.
Right.
And that, because that is what you build your reality around. That to me is the most important thing to understand, that what you see is not what is, it's what you've created or manifested from what you've thought. You want to change that, change the way you think.
Wow. I love that. Think about your thoughts.
Guys, that is...
epic.
That was epic. Let's keep this conversation going in the comment section, guys. If you have questions, post them in the comment sections. We will continue our conversation throughout the course of the evening, as we normally do. But like, share, comment. Like, this is... This episode has just way too many things to just be one episode. But we will chop it up, we will share it, and we will tag and post and put all the websites and links to all of their things, because it's really important to us on our side to make sure that you guys do that part on your side. So with that said, thank you for watching.
Peace out, everybody.
Peace out, everybody.
So fun.